This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro. What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, anyone know what channel the game's on?
We know. Download the Sports on What app today and always know how to watch the game. Satellite, cable, or streaming. Sports on What knows the channel the game is on, and you can too. Subscribe today to start your 7-day free trial. Sports on What. We know.
And now, here's the question.
Hola, bitches. Good day to you and yours. All right, National Public Radio, a.k.a. NPR, recently ran a story about why we don't remember being babies. Now, long story short, we form memories as newborns and infants. We just don't recall them as we get older. Now, they say that most people's earliest memories, most people, typically start around 2.5 to about 3 years old. But again, that's most people. Actor Nicolas Cage, he's not most people, not in any metric that you might have. So it should come as no surprise that Nick claims he can recall being in the womb. And naturally, he's not alone because the equally peculiar actor Terrence Howard, he also says he recalls being in his mother's womb. The difference that Terrence claims he can remember all 9 months. That's right. From the moment the sperm hit the egg, Terrence has a memory. According to him. Now, to be fair, Terrence does claim a lot of things. But whatever the case, all of us do have an earliest memory, whether you were 2, 4, 6, 25, or just yesterday. It just depends on who you are and what you remember. But that's what we want to talk about today. Your earliest or your first memories of your pathetic life. So today's question, brought to you by our friends at Advanced Hair Restoration, is good or bad, what is your most memorable early childhood memory?
To be a part of the big show, call 206-803-ROCK. Like KISW on Facebook, follow us on X and Instagram at Men's Room Live, and send those emails to themensroom at KISW.com.
The debauchery rolls on. You're listening to The Men's Room with Miles and Thrill. 99.9 KISW.
Home of Jones, away we go. Welcome to Season 20, Episode Number 4,286. What a large and a charged program we have for you today. Guaranteed future repeat on this oh-so-positive Friday.
Positive Friday.
Your last chance to win tickets to see Linkin Park on our show, September 24th, Climate Pledge Arena. They told us to pick a random time, and then we'll give you the secret word. You text that word to 206-803-ROCK. The time that we pick for you today will be 4:20.
Yeah!
4:20.
All right. I see what you did there, Miles.
Yes. By the way, Jolene still has one last pair of tickets coming up tonight, so we're not the last to have the tickets. But as far as our show goes, 4:20 is the time if you're looking to check out Linkin Park, September 24th at Climate Pledge Arena. What else do we have? Okay, we got some messed up stuff going on today. First and foremost, the NCAA basketball tournament is in town here in Seattle at said Climate Pledge Arena. All right. The Maryland Terrapins are playing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know anything about the Ted Smith, you know how big of a Maryland fan he is. And he would not miss this game for the world. So he took a vacation day to go see his Terps play basically in his hometown, which is a cool thing.
Yeah, it's not going to happen much, right? Yeah,
we almost took the day off, too, but we decided, hell with it, we'll come in and do the show. But Ted's not here, so we decided, look, no Ted versus the FCC today, obviously, because he is not here. Now, a couple days ago, we got a chance to sit down and talk to Gene Simmons.
From KISS.
From KISS. And we determined we're going to play you this interview today, right? Okay, because, you know, hell, Ted's not here. We got Gene Simmons. He's coming to town. Let's play the Gene Simmons interview, Positive Friday, the whole deal. I mean, hell, I met Gene Simmons once, never have interviewed him, nor have I interviewed any member of KISS. I ran into Tommy Thayer in a bathroom in Oregon one day. That's about as close as I've come to meeting a member of KISS. That's not true. I met Eric Singer, too. But anyway, so Gene Simmons coming to town, Muckleshoot Casino Resort, on April the 8th. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I go before the show real quick. To see what's going on as far as ticket sales and everything else. We can give you some updates since we're talking to Gene coming up, right? What is the first thing that pops up? What is the first thing? Gene Simmons postpones multiple solo tour shows.
Oh, come on. For real,
not,
dude?
I am not kidding.
Are you serious?
Gene Simmons has postponed 17 of the 26 dates of his upcoming solo tour.
Why?
The KISS Stars Tour, which was set to kick off April 3rd in Anaheim, is now instead slated to begin on May 2nd in Peachtree City, Georgia. As noted by Rock and Roll Experience.
You've got to be kidding.
And a woman who works for Simmons on the Backstage VIP Fan Experience, she confirmed the band's April dates and the Texas leg of their May dates have all been postponed until early 2026.
Until next year.
That is correct.
Oh, my God.
Come on.
They say, look, they say Gene is in perfectly good health.
Uh-huh.
He must have had something come up where he had a chance to make more money. That's the only thing I can think of. Like,
honestly, if it's not his health, it's money. Right?
He's going to be on a TV show. He's going to be in a movie. I'm telling you, he's not going to pass up being on the road unless he's got a better financial situation in front of him. If his health is fine.
Right.
You know, it's not waiting for his grandchild to arrive. Gene just fly back. You know,
oh, for sure.
Cancel a couple of shows. Anyway, we're still going to play the interview. Okay. Just know if you do have tickets to the show, you can get a refund, obviously. And the show will be rescheduled for 2026.
I'm glad I know that because I've been on the fence about going to the show.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know if it'd be any good. I don't know. But like I said, I'm a KISS apologist. You grew up with it. He's going to be in our backyard doing a solo thing. So I'm glad now I did not pull the trigger on that.
Yes. Well, the Tuesday night show.
When did they announce this?
We determined a day or two ago we're going to play this interview back to
you. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And between then and now, he canceled the freaking show.
Jesus, man.
So, okay.
Not canceled, Miles. He postponed it.
Yes, but the show for April 8th is definitely canceled. But he postponed it. We're like, all right, great.
Cool.
I mean, we got a chance to talk to Gene Simmons. I mean, that's the most important
and
part.
And he told us the things that you could expect at the show.
Oh, yeah.
Which steps a little bit outside of his normal. And, and that's why, after talking to him, I'm like, maybe I go to this. I'd be interested in seeing him do some of these things.
Right?
And, yeah. Well, no.
No. And, I mean, there's nowhere close. Like, he's going to be in Peachtree City, Georgia, then Beaver Dam, Kentucky, Red Bank, New Jersey, Montclair, New Jersey, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, Huntington,
New York. Bethlehem, Pennsylvania?
Uh-huh.
Bro, there's a lot of places to pick in PA, and Bethlehem is toward the bottom of the list.
Uncasville, Connecticut, Northfield, Ohio, Niagara Falls, Ontario. All those shows will play. So there's nothing close. You've really got to wait. I was going to say, like, maybe he's doing something in Vegas.
Or Portland, even.
No, he's not doing any of that crap. So, but we still have Gene coming up. We'll play the interview. We'll tell you before we do the interview that, look, the show's been canceled, blah, 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 for the people who are starting to listen in the, later on at 4:30 when we play the thing back. But, yeah, we're still going to play Gene Simmons. He's just
ignore everything he's talking about.
Yes, exactly. Ignore the entire interview.
Yeah. We're going to play it, but just ignore it.
That's an
like, listen to it, but ignore it at the same time.
Yeah, that's the best we can give you. So, Gene Simmons from KISS is joining us at 4:30 on the program to talk about the show in Muckleshoot that he will not be attending.
Yeah.
That's how our Friday's going already. I mean, right out of the gate.
Jeez.
We're already a train wreck.
I'm
all right.
This, I'm like, oh, my God.
God, are you kidding me?
That makes the rest of the show easy.
Yeah. Doesn't it?
We've set the bar.
Yeah.
I'm not going to work hard to get above that. Yeah. You've got to be kidding me. Literally today.
But it is a positive Friday.
Yes,
and ultimately, it is the weekend. And we will drink and toast into the weekend with a shot of the day. Then it's Bad Choice Friday time.
You know it's Bad Choice Friday. This is your fault.
Jam on.
And it's an opening day on Taco and Tequila Inspired Bad Choice Friday. As we will be live, we're not canceling.
Yeah.
Next Thursday as we broadcast from Pioneer Tacos.
Don't speak too soon.
And Tequila on opening
Gene Simmons day. Will be standing here.
It's right near Occidental Avenue and right near the stadiums down there. What do they have? They have Men's Room IPA on draft. They've got tacos. They've got tequila. Stop by, play a little Big Dummy with us live. Tense meat potatoes. We're probably just going to be sampling tacos and drinking tequila.
That's kind of my plan.
Yeah, so it's going to be a good afternoon. So if you're on your way down to the game, you're down there a little bit early, I'll stop by and join us for our live broadcast. So in honor of that, we're going to make that our Bad Choice Friday, so to speak. So representing Taco and tacos, that would be the band known as Taco.
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits? Putting on the ritz.
Show of hands, who knew that a band called Taco did this song?
I only know this because I'm old.
Yes,
been around, but
we were part of the MTV generation.
Okay. And,
but like I said to Miles,
they played this quite a bit.
Name another song from Taco.
You cannot.
You can't.
Yeah.
He may have put out an entire album, and it's probably just this song over and over.
There's got to be one other Taco song.
I wonder if it has this, because here's the thing about this song. It kind of reminds me of the B-52s in the sense of it's kind of stupid, but I dig it.
It's got a good groove to it.
That's what I'm saying.
But it's representing the tacos. You know, I like tacos a lot, but you know what I like better? I like tequila. So representing tequila, that would be the Champs.
Yeah.
I'm pulling for this one.
You're going for tequila?
Hell yeah.
I'm putting on taco, man.
Pro tip.
I like both.
Pro tip. If you are ever in a situation where someone challenges you to do karaoke, you do not tell them what song you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
You go up and you tell the DJ there. He said, look, I want to do tequila. That's all
Boom.
You have to
Done.
Do. So $50 says you won't get up there and do karaoke. $50? You're on.
Thing is, you don't even need to hit a note with this one either. Just tequila.
Yeah, but it's about how you say it, man.
You could be drinking while you do this song, and you still can't screw this up.
That's familiar. Yeah. You should drink tequila, because all you got to say is tequila.
It's a setup.
My favorite memory of this song is there was a long period there where my wife and I were living it up. We're having fun time. The weekends, my mother-in-law would always come over.
So before you got married.
I love my mother-in-law to death. I absolutely do. And so I was always stoked when she came over, because she was my drinking buddy. She didn't drink near as much, or my wife didn't drink near as much as I did, or her mother-in-law. Or her mother, rather. So they'd come over. I had this song on record. So that's how I'd get the party started. I would put this song on the doggone record player, and I'd dance my entire way just filling up shots of tequila, and I'd just start handing them out.
See, that's why you like it.
Hell yeah. Mm-hmm. I have such great memories of this song. I love this song.
Too, man. Yes. Okay. Vote now for Bad Choice Friday. If you follow us on X at Men's Room Live as we celebrate the Men's Room World Tour stop number 2. Again, that is next Thursday. Opening day down on Occidental at Pioneer Tacos and Tequila. So we'll broadcast our show live from 2 until 6. And those are your selections on a Bad Choice Friday. And today we're going to talk about growing up and the time that you really remember something either really good that happened in your life or something that happened that maybe was a little bit more traumatic and bad. And we start with this story. And it basically is why we don't remember being babies. And brain scans reveal some new clues.
All right.
So, Tristan Yates, she says she has no doubt about her first memory, even if it is a little bit fuzzy. I was about 3 1/2 in Callaway Gardens in Georgia, she recalls, just running around with my twin sister trying to pick up Easter eggs. But she has zero memories before that, which is typical. This amnesia of our babyhood is pretty much a rule. We have memories from what happened earlier today and memories from what happened earlier last week and even from a few years ago. She is a cognitive neuroscientist at Columbia. But all of us lack memories from our infancy. Is that because we don't make memories when we're babies, or is that there's something else responsible? Now, in a new research published by Yates and her colleagues in the journal Science, they propose that babies are able to form memories, even if they become inaccessible later in life.
All right.
And these results might reveal something crucial about the earliest moments of our development. That's the time when we learn who our parents are. That's when we learn language. And that's when we learn how to walk. Now, what happens in your brain in the first 2 years of life is magnificent. That's the period of by far the greatest plasticity across your whole lifespan. And the better you understand how your brain learns and remembers in infancy lays the foundation for everything you knew, know, and do for the rest of your life.
This explains the terrible twos. Right, you think about it, like you're born, you know absolutely nothing except how to feed, right? Because that's just kind of ingrained.
You
know,
say but like when you said, have something wrong,
you learn who your parents are, kind of how they're going to be. But then at 2 years old, you get to say things like no, because now you have just enough knowledge to know that you can push back against someone fighting your wishes, right? And to be honest with you, if you don't have kids yet, just so you know, 3 is 400 times worse than 2. So it's terrible twos. I think people call them terrible twos because it's the first time your kid gives you any kind of flack or has any kind of attitude or forms an opinion about anything. So everything they've learned, you find out at 2. By 3, they're just a freaking nightmare.
That's why grandparents are imprinted when they spend time with babies
and their
grandchildren, because there is a link to that in their actual parents.
That's why my parents, they were living, God, I don't remember where they were living. I think they were still in Austin. But after we had kids, when we had the second kid, they said, hey, we're moving up to Seattle. They were here for 10, 12 years. And they said the reason why is, basically like you said, to kind of imprint who we are on the kids. My mom, as my mother says, I want them to cry when I die. I'm like, well, that's cool.
They might be the only ones.
Or they might not. You never know. They know you.
That's right. They say there's a reason we don't know much about infant memories. One of the best ways to look deep in the brain is with a functional magnetic resonant image machine, which requires a person to remain still for an extended period of time. Try that with a baby.
Yeah.
Infants, in many ways, are the worst possible subject population.
Yes, they are.
Admits the doctors. They don't understand instruction. It's like talking to a photograph. You get a blurry picture, so you can't move a millimeter. And also, they have really short attention spans. So we had to adapt. So the colleagues have spent nearly a decade figuring out how to do basically an MRI on babies. And they have come up with all sorts of tricks to keep them happy and engaged. Here's how the particular experiment went down. The babies were shown a video inside of an MRI machine. Throughout, the background displays a green kaleidoscope pattern. This kind of like psychedelic screen, meant to have infants fixate toward the center.
If you have a kid, you know this to be true.
Then one image at a time appears for 2 seconds before disappearing. These are images that they have never seen before. A canyon, a dog toy, a woman's face.
A cat's anus.
About a minute later, we show them one image they just saw alongside a different image from the same category. That could be the canyon, say, alongside a waterfall. Now, if the baby remembered seeing the canyon earlier, the child will look longer at the canyon than at the waterfall, as if you're still learning about it. So you're looking at it more. It's only really when we have a preference for a familiar thing that we take that as evidence of successful memory formation.
Keep in mind, it took them 10 years to get to the point to do the. How many cuss words and shots of liquor do you think they took trying to figure out a way to get an infant to stay still in an MRI machine?
Now, this procedure actually gave the researchers an indication as to which images the baby remembered, which they forgot. And it now appears that infancy isn't a passive, forgettable stage of our lives. It's a relevant consideration for how we raise and educate children, even how we understand early trauma and stress.
All right.
They said there's a lot to still figure out. Just how durable are the memories that we may be storing as infants, and if they're still there. And they're locked away in our brains. Or are they forever off limits? Or is there a way to tap into that part of your brain and remember some of those experiences?
I think, you know what's sad is, but I think they're right about this, is that the traumatic stuff. So it's not even necessarily traumatic, but how you perceive things. So my first memory of anything, I'm about 2.5 years old, according to my parents at the time. And I don't remember a lot about this home. I only know we lived there because you hear tell from your parents, but I distinctly remember my neighbors because I remember their dog because they had a Great Dane. And the Great Dane was full grown. Keep in mind, I'm 2 or 2.5 years old. So as a kid, I remember vividly that I thought this thing was a monster. And like I said, I don't have a ton of memories from this place. I remember the dog. I remember being in the yard between houses, so to speak. And the neighbor's garage door was open. They had the dog out. The dog was licking my head. So when I looked back, the dog wasn't doing anything bad. It was a nice dog. But I remember I was petrified. I was frozen. And my father trying to convince me that the dog was fine. But in my head, this was not a dog. This was a goddamn monster.
Yes.
Period. And again,
yes.
There's nothing. But I remember that because it was very traumatic to me at that age. For this four-legged creature that's not a horse. Like, a dog should not be this big. That's how I perceive
right.
it. And here's this big-ass dog. Listen, never did anything to me. As far as I know, never did anything to anybody. It was just huge. I did not want to be around. But I remember that vividly. And I couldn't tell you another thing about that age. But I remember that.
Well, as far as my upbringing goes, my mom was a high school teacher when I was 3 years old. And she would leave very early. Because high school started earlier. Like anything else, the older the kids are, the earlier they get there, the bus schedule and everything else. So I was dropped off at daycare very early in the morning. And because of that, the daycare that I went to did not have a television. So I never really was exposed to Sesame Street, Electric Company, all those things until a little bit later on in life. So for me, the television was not necessarily a source of entertainment. But a couple times a year, they would show programming, and it was like on Sunday night on, The Wonderful World of Disney or whatever, where I would watch movies like The Wizard of Oz, which was on every year.
Christmas, yep.
Mary Poppins, which was on every year.
I never saw Mary Poppins.
There were a handful.
I've never seen it. Wizard of Oz, I always watch. Mary Poppins, I mean, I've seen clips from it. I understand what it's about. Never seen it.
You probably wouldn't like it if you watched it these days.
Well, you know me. Of course I wouldn't like it now. I'm sure I would have liked it as a kid, but I just never saw it.
But to me, the TV was not something that you watched. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't. The programming just wasn't there by the time I got home.
Yeah.
But I definitely remember at one point in time, I watched Mary Poppins. My mom always kept an umbrella by the door.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was a ladder that was outside of our apartment. It was a Rambler. It was a one-story Rambler, a duplex. We had neighbors to our side. And for some reason, they were fixing something on the roof. I don't know if they were cleaning the gutters or whatever, but that ladder was out there. And it intrigued me because I wanted to go up it. But I didn't know how I was going to get down. So I grabbed the ladder, just like I saw in Mary Poppins, and I climbed up on top of the roof. And I figured out how to open the umbrella, which I'd never done before. And I figured out how to lock it in. I remember this.
You did all this.
I remember standing on the edge of the roof.
You did all that.
And jumping off.
Yeah. Then it all went to hell.
Just slamming my body into the ground.
Yeah. So trauma. That's what I'm saying. You remember this.
That was 3.5. So our question, good or bad, what is your most memorable early childhood memory? 206-803-ROCK.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Question on the So Positive Friday, good or bad, what is your most memorable early childhood memory?
206-803-ROCK.
Here's the pick-me-up from the text line. We lived in Greece, and my mom threw the cat off the third-floor balcony because it was annoying her. The cat showed right back up at the front door. Bufus, I think his name was. Jesus, man. Hello, Daniel. Welcome to the men's room.
Hola. Happy Friday, gentlemen.
Hola. Positive Friday, brother.
So my earliest and clearest memory, because I have two others, but this is the one that I remember the most. I was about two or three, and it was nighttime. I was sharing a room with my eldest brother, and my bed had a view of the window. And from the window, I could see a tree. I knew it was a tree, and it was one of those trees. I think it's a fir or something like that, the one with all the pines on it, but not a Christmas tree. Anywho, so I was looking at it, and it was kind of swaying back and forth, and all of a sudden, something happened, and it morphed into the head of a owl, and it just scared me so much that I bolted out of my bed and jumped onto my brother.
And what did your brother have to say when you're in his bed because the tree is freaking him?
Well, first off, he woke up, and he was just like, oh, my God! But I don't really remember much else other than that. He was just really scared, and I think he calmed me down, but that's the extent of the memory.
Yeah, you have a very vivid imagination when you're younger as far as things that could possibly scare you.
Well, cool.
I mean, even if you have a closet door cracked open or just darkness in general or whatever the deal is, for some reason, like, those are the ages of, like, living in a horror movie, especially when it comes time to go to bed.
You're right, man. There's something about, and it's so stupid. Like, the dark itself didn't bug me too much because inevitably, except when we lived out in the woods, then it was pitch black. But there was always some kind of illumination. But, man, you're right. It's my closet. I know what's in that closet. But somehow, if that door was cracked at all, it bugged the hell out of me.
Yeah,
like, you could open it all the way, I'm fine. You could close it all the way, I'm fine. But somehow, if it's cracked, that means that there's something in the closet that's spying on me.
I had a door in my bedroom that was about 3 feet high. And it was a crawl space that went underneath the roof where you could store stuff.
Yeah.
But that was just like a little latch door.
But every horror movie, that's the last door you want to open.
Exactly. And you know, they did store stuff in there. So it was always in my view. And any time I would go to bed, you know, whatever my imagination was, something was coming out of that door to come get me at night.
And what is it about little doors, man?
There were times where I had a little tiny desk or I had an easel and I'd push it. I just started pushing stuff in front of that door just to make sure at night that nothing could come out and get me. That was just my mentality.
No, dude, I get it. Like you said, little doors like that, because again, every horror movie, either it's the door that goes to the attic, the door that goes to the basement, but if it's just in the house, then yes, it's the tiny, weird door that as a kid, you just can't wrap your head
around. Right. And my parents knew. They knew that I was so scared of that door that they would instruct, what's the best way to put this? They would instruct Santa Claus to put the toys in there. So to help you alleviate some of the... Right, so I would never find any.
Oh, before Christmas.
That would be the last place.
Tell you, like, you got gifts in there, you just have to open the door.
Well, I mean, they knew I would not. So that was their golden spot to hide that kind of stuff. Another memory I've got, which is kind of a weird one, but there were two. So living in Detroit is when I can really start remembering things in my life. So I know I had a squirrel that I would feed peanuts to in the wintertime. And the squirrel loved me. And
again, because you're giving him peanuts.
Again, I'm 4 years old. I had not started kindergarten yet. I'm basically home every day with a stay-at-home mom at that point in time. And that squirrel, after I, you know, fed it a couple times, it would sit out on the stoop and wait for me. And it got to the point where there are pictures of me kind of like in a whole snowmobile suit.
Yeah.
Boots and all with my hood up, sitting on the stoop of the house. It is snowing outside. There is a squirrel sitting beside me, and I'm feeding the squirrel peanuts. There are multiple pictures of me feeding the squirrel almost every day. So that was one that was burned into my brain because it was a daily thing.
And
my mom always had peanuts for me because she enjoyed watching.
Specifically to feed the squirrel, right?
There was a glass, you know, store window.
Turns out that squirrel had a peanut allergy and Miles killed it.
But the cool thing about that squirrel, and I remember this, the squirrel never took the nuts and went, because it's wintertime, didn't take them to a nest. He basically just sat there and ate them right in front of me. Shelled them, sat there, ate one at a time. When he was done with the one, he kind of looked back up at me, and I'd give him another peanut.
Now, the other thing I remember about living in Detroit was there was, at one point in time in the early 70s, late 60s, there was an amusement park that was on an island. The only way that you could get to this amusement park was by boat. And I got a chance to go out there with my stepfather's friends who had boats and to go to, I'd never been to an amusement park before.
Sure.
So that was my first amusement park that I can remember. Most of the rides were big roller coasters. I rode the Ferris wheel. They did have some kid stuff, obviously.
Back when you could handle the teacups.
But just the idea, that was the first memory of being in a boat. That was the first memory of going to an amusement park where you could get ice cream. You could get, I mean, to me, it was like this magical island. So when I thought about, like, you know, a magical island, that to me was what an island was all about. You took a boat out there, they have pizza. They have roller coasters, they have Ferris wheels, and whatever I was tall enough to ride on, I rode it.
You know what's crazy, man? I'm thinking about that. Like, what was my first amusement park? It's the same thing. It wasn't Detroit, but we were living in Rochester. So most of my memories that are kind of permanent, I can remember probably around 4 or 5 years old, we're living in Rochester. Anyway, we would go to Toronto quite often. It's a decent, or maybe 2.5 hours, whatever. Forever as a kid, but 2.5 hours. And because we go to Niagara Falls, and every once in a while we would go to Toronto since we're there. But it's the same thing where there's an amusement park on an island. You take this ferry. It's like a 10-minute ride, but it's on this island, right? So I had not given it much thought. And then we took the kids to Canada 5 years ago, 6 years ago, whatever. We're in Toronto. And I'm like, it's weird. It all started coming back to me. You know, we'd walk by a building, and I'm like, why do I know this building? Then I'm like, holy crap, I know where I'm at. So I told my wife, I said, there's an amusement park across the water there, but you can't really, you can see the island, but you can't really see the amusement park. She's like, there's no amusement park there. I'm like, there's an amusement park there. Let's take the kids to the right age. And it was everything that I freaking remembered. I don't know that they've added anything new. But I mean,
but it's still there.
Every single
one. The one in Detroit is not there anymore.
Oh, really? Yeah, the one in Toronto.
I don't think it made it through the
80s. But it was cool. It was kind of cool to go back and be like, I remember. And again, it's not like strong memories, but I remember I got on this ride specifically with my father versus my mother, depending what it is. And the kids loved it. Looking back as an adult, the place sucks. Now for kids, it's outstanding. Yeah. But I remember I'm thinking to myself, this is when you realize when your parents did you a solid. Because to me, everyone's having fun when you go to a place like this. Going there as an adult, I'm like, that is impossible that my parents enjoyed this.
Our question, good or bad, what is your most memorable early childhood memory? 206-803-ROCK.
Was it?
Bablo Island.
Bablo Island?
Yes, it was. Right.
Hello, Chris. Welcome to the men's room.
Hola, bichola.
Hola.
Positive Friday.
It is.
Positive Friday.
So this is kind of a crazy story. I was only a year and a half, and I got rushed to the hospital with poison. I got poisoned.
You got poisoned, or you poisoned yourself?
Well, that's a good question. So in the late 60s, there was this thing that you could plug into an outlet and you dropped a little tablet in there and it would emit whatever it emitted into the house to keep pests away, like bugs.
Oh, yeah. I vaguely remember.
Remember
that.
Those?
Yep.
Well, my mom watched me do this. I took the little tablet out of it and put it in my mouth and spit it out right away because it, I guess it tasted nasty or whatever.
Yeah, like poison.
Yeah, right. And so she called the family doctor, and the family doctor goes, oh, just keep an eye on him. And I guess in the middle of the night, and what I remember, this, I was a year and a half old. It's crazy that I remember this. What I remember is the lights on the ambulance.
Oh,
yep.
So you
terrified me.
Yeah, you got an ambulance ride at 1.5.
Yeah, and they took me to the hospital, and they had to overdose me with barbiturates to save me from the poison.
Well, you can't tell.
Well, if you knew me, you could tell.
Yes, I've
stayed on that regimen ever since.
Exactly. Not much development.
Poison and barbiturates.
Well, that's kind of like, to me, that's like falling in quicksand, man, because poisoning was one of those things that they drilled in your head growing up in that era, as far as...
Because everything was poisoned, but nothing was given any kind of safety
all
protocol.
All the kids get poisoned. Yeah, for some reason, it was like this big thing. We are going to stop kids from being poisoned.
But so apparently...
They would never allow that kind of thing today.
Well, they wouldn't be safe. I mean, look at it, though. All right, so there were Tide Pods. Now, granted... You understand little kids eating Tide Pods. They make Tide Pods look appealing. It's like toothpaste, right? So we understood that. It was when the teenagers were doing it. Like, look, you're old enough that you're just stupid. I mean, straight up, you're an idiot. But so what Tide did, at least, was they made the lid harder to get off. Like, we're still going to make them look super appetizing and delicious for children of all ages. It's just harder to get into. But in my experience, when I can't get into something that's child safe, I hand it to my kid, like, open this for me. And they do it in no time.
Yeah.
But when we were growing up, honestly, there weren't a lot of, like, safety precautions. They just told parents, like, hey, you know, this gun could shoot your kid in the face. But there's no safety on it. Just keep it away from them. This stuff right here is poison. We're sorry that it looks like lemonade. We're not going to do anything about it.
Well, the thing was, with bleach and all those other things, they were in jugs. So jugs were also what, you know, you typically drank stuff out of the refrigerator.
Yeah.
So when I opened up the kitchen pantry... All the things were on the floor, all the cleaning products that my mom had. I don't know if they mailed out Mr. Yuck stickers to everybody, kind of like they do Easter seal stamps.
A lot of times they'd hand it. You were the oldest kid in your class or in your family, right?
Yeah.
But I remember they would give us, like, packs to take home, and then your parents would put the Mr. Yuck
on. And they all had them on there.
But before that, man.
It was like a guard. You know, like,
because that's all you needed to see.
Child-proofing your home, in a way.
Well, yeah, they didn't make any other effort. It's like, hey, if you see Mr. Yuck, don't do it. But for whatever reason, that resonates more with kids than anything else. You can threaten
them. He's mean and he's green.
Yeah, that's it, man.
Like the Hulk. A good or bad, what is your most memorable early childhood memory? 206-803-ROCK.
Now, I don't believe this is poisonous only because I'm still alive. But when my brother and I were younger, keep in mind, my brother's 5 years older. So I just assumed if he said this is the thing to do, then he knew what he was talking about. But I think I was maybe 4. And again, these are fleeting memories. I just remember doing it a lot. But Prel shampoo back in the day... It came in this plastic tube, but the tube looked exactly like a toothpaste tube. It's got the flat tapered end, and then you unscrew the top and you squeeze it out. So my brother, and he wasn't pulling a con on me, he thought that it was toothpaste. But we liked brushing our teeth with Prel. Now, understand, it tasted terrible, but it created a lot of bubbles because it's shampoo. But we didn't know it's shampoo, but it's next to the toothpaste. It was a green liquid. So we would get up every morning, or at least on the weekends, where you always got up before your parents, right? They're sleeping in. We want to see cartoons, so we're up first. And we would brush our teeth because we wanted to be good little kids, make our parents proud, and we would put Prel on our toothbrush. And it didn't matter that, unlike any other toothpaste, it just melted into the bristles, right? It didn't keep its form up top. And we'd brush our teeth, and the more you tried to rinse out your mouth, the more bubbles you got.
Yeah.
We found that to be a very odd thing. We didn't understand why anyone would design a toothpaste like this, but it is what it is, right? I'm not the inventor. So we'd brush our teeth and all this. My parents probably took about 6 weeks to catch on, and it was my mother asking us, she's like, are you guys using my shampoo? Very honestly, we were like, no, man, we don't use your shampoo. Hell, you wash our hair still at this point. We don't know. And so she pulls the Prel thing out. And my brother's like, oh, well, no, Mom, that's toothpaste. She's like, Jesus. She's like, it's not toothpaste. It's shampoo. We're like, what? She's like, you use it in your hair. How long have you been brushing your teeth like this? We're like, well, a lot, man. She's like, oh, my God. So I do remember her reading the back.
Oh, my God.
Yelling to my father reading the back, him laughing. Looking at us, it's, guys, just, it was not poisonous, but he's like,
right,
this is the toothpaste, which is just straight Colgate, the white stuff back in the day. This is shampoo. We had no idea. But yeah, I mean, for weeks, just brush your teeth with shampoo.
Good or bad, what is your most memorable early childhood memory? 206-803-ROCK. Doesn't matter, you're going to lose all those teeth anyway.
Yeah, that's the amazing thing. Like, yeah, who cares? Hello, Bill. Welcome to the men's room. Hello, Bill.
Hello.
Hola. Hola.
How are you, Bill?
I'm happy to survive.
Well, nice.
Listen, when I was a kid, I think it was between 2 and 3. This goes way back, predates you guys. This is like 1959, 1960.
My God, man.
Jesus, you're old.
Yeah, man. Elvis hadn't even been popular, but anyway, I got a Jeep. We were just shipped back to America. I was born in Germany, and we ended up in Fort Bragg, North Carolina. And that Christmas morning, I went out and I had a Jeep there. One that you kind of sit in and you can pedal, you know?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, well, my dad just got promoted. And so we moved into this duplex that had a little, had a garage and had a little ramp on it. Well, I did the Fred Flintstone. I didn't know how to drive. I crashed that thing into the sticker bushes, and it scared me for another minute before I got back on that thing. And pretty soon I was ripping down the hill. But that's my first childhood memory, pain.
It is the trauma, as they say, typically your earliest memory, and again, not memories that are connected to a bunch of other things, but it's that slideshow memory. Because something bad happened to you. Someone even said, there was a Reddit discussion about it, and someone said, look, man, I was either a year and a half or 2 years old. They go, I remember burning my hand. Like, the pain from touching something hot. Yep. They're like, I don't remember anything else about that age, but I remember the moment. And I'm like, you know what? That's my son remembers it. He struggles to remember the first house he was born in, but maybe a month after we moved into the house we're currently in, I was cooking something. He's standing in the kitchen, and I see him had an electric stove, so I pulled the thing off the burner, but the burner's still kind of orange, and I could just see him eyeing it. And I said, man, whatever you do, do not touch that because it's hot. And then it occurs to you that you can tell the kid that something's hot, but until they know what hot is and how much it hurts, you're not really saying anything. So in my peripheral vision, I can see him quietly putting his finger up there. I like anything. He touches it, snatches his hand back, cups his other hand over it, and I just looked at him, and I said, do you understand what hot is now, right? Just trying to fight that. Yeah. I said, okay, seriously, when somebody says something's hot, don't touch it. And honest to God, he had such PTSD from that, you could say, hey, man, we're warming up the car. I'm not getting in the car. We're like, no. The car's not on fire, bro. That means something entirely different.
I remember flying down a driveway of a neighbor with a big wheel. And at the time, big wheel just put in a brake on the back.
Yeah, it did pull a lot. Up and, the blue brake.
But it would only work on one right back wheel. I'm flying down a hill, and I'm slamming that thing on, man. Start going a little sideways, like kind of grooving, like, and all of a sudden, boom, just smack my head off the pavement. I think I knocked myself out at about 3 or 4 years old on that thing.
I do not know how children survive. I mean, well, we're all of ground, us, man. I know the load of the ground. You went as fast as you could go, which I'm sure from adult standards is not super fast. But to a kid, you're hauling ass, man. You know, and we fell off everything. There's no helmets. I remember being a kid, full memories now. I'm like 8 or 9 years old, and we lived on a hill. And at that age, you know, every boy that has a bike wants to do wheelies and do tricks and all this kind of thing. So we got all the parents to sit out front, started at the top of the hill, and we're riding as fast as we can down. So we did like 3 quote-unquote shows for them. The first one, we just wanted to show our speed and how well we could skid into the driveway. Side note, don't do it in my father's driveway because I left the tire marks. He explained that to me later. But the second time we went down, I remember looking at my mom because every kid looks for their parents to make sure the parents are impressed, right? I look over and she has her hands covering her face. I can see her eyes. And I couldn't figure out why. But we're flying down the hill and I'm standing on my handlebars. I'm still holding them, but I'm standing on my handlebars. But to me, this is the easiest trick on earth. I don't know what the effing problem is, right? Whatever. It's all good. You fast forward. My son gets a bike. He wants to show me the things he can do. And I swear to God, I immediately was reliving my mother's trauma. He's showing me all those little tricks. And you're just like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. You need to. He's going to kill himself. But I can't say anything. Just let it go.
Good or bad, what is your most memorable early childhood memory? 206-803-ROCKS.